The Daily Connect podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Welcome to the Daily Connect podcast. It is Thursday, the 30th of August. We have a great show in store for you today, as joining me for the news review are two Connect radio hosts, Gary Moritz and David Hogg. Their shows, Sunset Melodies and A Little Alternative, couldn't be further in styles. But do their views on our news subjects align? Well, today the gang will be addressing stories affecting the blind and partially sighted community, including a lawsuit for a beer company, children going untested, and how much hope scientific discoveries actually bring to blind and partially sighted people. There's a special announcement today from the Bookshare service and the RNIB Talking Books Library. Robert and Red from Read On will be bringing us that news. Our Society of the Week is the children's organisation Victa, and we'll be hearing from one of their service users, Matthew. Also today, we meet Danny, who tells us about how he sees as someone with congenital cataracts and glaucoma. You're listening to The Daily Connect, and my name is Chris Wallace.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Before all that, though, and we are returning to someone we met on The Daily Connect podcast yesterday. We heard from blind adventurer Luke Holworth, who is just one of many volunteers taking part in next month's Big Jump, which will see people jumping out of a plane in a parachute leap to help raise funds for RNIB. But Luke also helped set up Sightline, an organisation in the northwest of England which helps local people who have difficulties with their sight. He's been explaining it all to Alan Russell.
Sightline is a telephone helpline service which supports people through the emotional and practical side of dealing with sight loss. We've actually just opened a new service at the minute, and we offer a befriending service. So anybody in the northwest who is just feeling a bit lonely, a bit isolated, because as I can attest to, you know, there's a lot of feelings of that. I mean, you can be with somebody from 9 till 6 every day, doing something different days of the week. But at 6 o'clock, especially when the winter comes in, it can be such a lonely and isolating place. So the befriending service has just started up, and it's going really well. All my volunteers that are on the helpline do have a visual impairment themselves. And on the befriending service, if they don't have a visual impairment, some of them do have sight, but they have close links to the VI world. We're having more calls than ever supporting people all over the northwest. I've been out to various different charities over the last couple of months, and we've just been supporting each other. So we've got the helpline, which operates between 6 and 10 p.m. in an evening, and that's done over the phone. And the befriending service is just done at any time of the day, whenever it's convenient for the volunteer and the befriendee as well. I'm a bit like Cupid in the sense that I match make. So based on people's interests and hobbies, I will match the person with somebody else with similar interests and hobbies. And then, yeah, and they talk and they support each other.
There is a common goal, I suppose, when you look at RNIB, Sightline, local charities. You're looking to improve the lives of people who have lost a sight or are partially sighted. Do you find that through Sightline, you know, people sort of feed back to you then and talk to you about the changes that even just talking to someone has made?
I think just knowing that somebody has been through a similar situation, I always say to my volunteers, never say you can understand what they're going through, because every sight loss journey is different. But what I say is that you can relate to them. I love working with all the different charities over the northwest that I do, because we do all work together, and I offer a service that they don't offer, and they're offering services that, you know, we signpost back to them during the day. They offer services that we don't offer. So it is all about working together.
If people would like to learn more about Sightline then, Luke, or would like to get in touch,
yeah,
how did he do that?
So our helpline number is 0800 587 2252, and that's operated between 6 and 10 p.m. every evening, 365 days a year. If people ring that during the day, they will get me, Luke, the volunteer coordinator. So if anyone fancies volunteering, yeah, if you just ring that during the day, it forwards to me up to 6 o'clock.
And thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Alan.
The Daily Connect podcast.
RNIB have exciting news about some brand new and some classic additions to the Bookshare service and the RNIB Talking Books Library. Here's Read-On's Red Cell and Robert Kirkwood with more.
For everyone out there who loves books and reading, we've got some fantastic news. RNIB has partnerships with several UK publishers, ensuring that a wide range of books and accessible formats is made available to the RNIB library. And here's Robert Kirkwood to tell us the latest news.
Thanks, Red. Well, adding to that list of publishers are one of the big ones, Penguin Random House. It's going to affect both the Bookshare service and RNIB Library, as RNIB have started a new partnership with Penguin Random House, which means that all of their backlist and newly published titles will be available from Bookshare, and all their audio files will be available from the Talking Books Library, both backlist and newly published, and they're supplying all of these files free of charge.
And that's a huge number of books, isn't it, Robert? And I believe you've got some of the list in front of you.
I have. I've been looking at children's titles, I've been looking at classics, fiction, non-fiction, and of course the Ladybird series, which you may remember from your youth. I think the big names will be Roald Dahl. We've already got some Roald Dahl books in the library, including James and the Giant Peach that he read himself. But there are 135 editions, including all the favourites, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the BFG and Matilda. And some books my son will be very happy are being added to the library are The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, the full series by Jeff Kinney. Also titles by Jeremy Strong, Kathy Cassidy, and of course Peppa Pig and the aforementioned Ladybird classics.
And for more grown-up readers, there's a full selection of Clive Cussler books, Dan Brown, Marianne Keyes, and one that I'm particularly looking forward to getting hold of, All Are Wrong Todays by Ilan Mostai. And here's Robert with the blurb.
It's a love story that could only happen because of an accident of time travel. Tom and Penny belong to a world so perfect, there's no war, no poverty, and no underripe avocados. But when something awful happens to Penny, and Tom tries to make it right, he accidentally destroys everything, waking up in our broken, dysfunctional world. Only here, Penny and Tom have a second chance. Should Tom go back to his brilliant but loveless existence, or risk everything by staying in our messy, complicated world for his one and only chance at true love? And the website BuzzFeed's reviews it, saying it's a wonderful life meets the Jetsons.
And it's not just fiction titles that Penguin Random House are going to be giving us. There's a wonderful selection of non-fiction as well, isn't there, Robert?
There is. Can you say this name?
Yes, it's Yuval Noah Harari and his book Sapiens.
A brief history of humankind. Planet Earth is 4.5 billion years old. In just a fraction of that time, one species among countless others has conquered it. Us. We are the most advanced and the most destructive animals ever to have lived. What makes us brilliant? What makes us deadly? What makes us sapiens? In this bold and provocative book, the author explores who we are, how we got here, and where we're going. Sapiens is a thrilling account of humankind's extraordinary history, from the Stone Age to the Silicon Age, and our journey from insignificant apes to rulers of the world.
That sounds pretty thought-provoking, as does 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. And another one that I'll be getting hold of is Arnhem by Anthony Beaver, his account of the Bridge Too Far raid in the Second World War.
Yeah, that was a Sunday Times bestseller, and talking of bestsellers, we can't ignore the fact that there's loads of cookbooks from Jamie Oliver getting in as well.
Yeah, fortunately I never have to see how badly what I cook compares to his pictures. But there are some great recipes in there that I'll look forward to getting stuck into.
Including Peppa Pig. But Penguin wouldn't be Penguin without those classics. We've talked about the Ladybird classics, but there's also the Canterbury Tales, the Great Gatsby.
And great news for all visually impaired students out there, the full range of Charles Dickens novels, saving us the hard times of having to read them all word by word, as I did at university.
But we could talk about these titles all day, and we will do on a future episode of Read On. But just to reiterate the news, RNIB are starting a new partnership with Penguin Random House, which means that all of their backlist and newly published titles will be available from Bookshare, and all their audio files will be available from the Talking Books Library. That's both backlist and newly published. And again, Penguin Random House are supplying all of this free of charge. And as I said, we can hear more about this on RNIB Connect Radio's Read On, your one-stop shop for book news, reviews and author interviews. Read, when can we hear it?
Friday afternoons at 1, Sundays at 3 and Mondays at 6.
And we're always online at rnibconnectradio.org.uk. Red, thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert, and thank you, Penguin Random House.
I love hearing those two together. Now, for more information, head to rniblibrary.com or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This year marks RNIB's 150th anniversary. To celebrate, we've been asking the blind and partially sighted community for their stories and experiences of sight loss. We will be sharing these stories over the coming months to document the changes we've seen in the last 150 years. Today, it's the turn of Sandra Wilson. She says, "An almost casual remark in 1978 by someone from RNIB gave me the machine which really did change my life. The Opticon, optical to tactile converter, is a battery-operated machine that converts print into tactile letters by moving the camera along the print with one hand and feeling the printed letter with the forefinger of your other. I'd heard of it, but thought it was mainly for computer programmers. Opticon training was 9 days in London, and I can honestly say it was one of the most stimulating things I've done. I could read print, check my bills and bank statements, read labels, and be more independent in my job as a careers advisor. While I now read print on the computer with an app, often hitched to a braille display, it all began with the Opticon, which pioneered today's OCRs. I still use it almost every day." If you're interested in sharing your story, please complete the submission at www.rnib.org.uk/150stories.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Welcome back to The Daily Connect, and it's time now for our news review, where we highlight some of the stories affecting the blind and partially sighted community this week. Joining me to go through three stories that have made an impact, I'm very pleased to welcome hosts of two shows right here on RNIB Connect Radio, and those shows couldn't be much more different. A Little Alternative host, David Hogg, and Sunset Melodies host, Gary Moritz. Welcome both.
Hello.
Hello.
It's great to have you both in the room at the same time because your shows are so far apart thematically and on the schedule. It's nice to bring you both together.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to hear you, Dave, from this end, down in London.
Yes, we're uniting each other through geography as well. David has joined me in the studio, but Gary is way down in London, soaking up the sun, I presume, Gary?
Oh, yeah, it's lovely and warm down here, yeah.
Now, there's quite a mix of stories this week, as we'll be talking about children at risk due to a lack of early eye tests and hope for the blind and partially sighted community due to a scientific breakthrough. But we're starting our news review today with some beer. Hey!
Hey!
Well, actually, we're starting our news review with a beer company, BrewDog, who found themselves in trouble recently. James Ross worked in their packaging department when he discovered he was losing his sight. BrewDog offered him an alternative role, which he declined as he enjoyed his job. BrewDog had concerns for safety, so instead asked him to leave his job altogether. Now, we'll start with you, Gary. RNIB Scotland said adaptations could be made for James to keep his job, but BrewDog said they were just concerned for safety. So who is in the right?
Well, I believe that adjustments can be made. They are available, especially these days. I mean, from personal experience, I know that I can call upon my employers to make adjustments for me, no matter what they are. And the interesting part is that when you make your first set of adjustments, you start to sort of get used to those, then you realise, you know what, I think I need something else to be done. And you can make that request, and so you add in your adjustment. So it's a gradual process, but the point is that no matter what those things are, whatever you need, they can be done.
Now, BrewDog did issue a statement saying, "We worked with James in order to find a suitable alternative role within the business where his safety would not be compromised. But James wanted to keep his packaging role. We ended up in a position where we had to balance James's wishes with the best interest of the team around him. And while we regret that an agreement couldn't be reached, we had a moral responsibility to prioritise the safety of our team. We are really sorry that this situation has ended this way and wish James all the best in his new role and upcoming studies." Now, David, the subsequent tribunal expressed concerns about the lack of knowledge of BrewDog employees dealing with such matters and said it trusted appropriate action would be taken. Are we still living in a culture where employers, even a young and vibrant employer such as BrewDog, are unable or unwilling to deal with sight loss?
I think it comes down to disability more general, and I think that as an employer, you have to either have to or have to be seen to be accommodating to everybody regardless of their ability to do the role that they're in. But I think that given that this was a gradual deterioration of sight loss, when you're hired to do a job, you're hired based on the skills that you've got and your ability to do that job. And if you're then not able to do that, then you can kind of see their point, but their statement that they released was a bit tone deaf, really. But as far as the culture of companies, I think it's a thing that will come into fruition more as things like this happen, that companies will start to have to adapt to different people's ability to do different jobs. And it's this whole inclusivity thing, which has been a huge part of 2018 so far.
As BrewDog stated, though, their major concern was safety. They offered James an alternative role within the company. Do you think that he should have accepted the alternative role and moved away from the packaging department?
Possibly, but I can understand why his own sense of pride didn't. Because, as he said, it's a job that he liked, a job that he enjoyed, so why would he do something else? But I can kind of see why BrewDog did that. Cynical outlook, I know, but maybe from a PR standpoint rather than actually wanting him to take up the job.
I think that when you look at it from the company's point of view and what they're doing, yes, it sounds honourable to offer another boss, but actually it's probably a way of getting out of having to do anything to help this chap do his role he's doing, the packaging role. So I just think it's laziness in the end. There's not enough investigation, there's not enough learning, trying to find out what can we do for this chat. We're in 2018 now, we're not in 1918, and there is so much out there that can be done to help vision-impaired people do almost any job. And I think the article also states for the R&IB Scotland, professions like teachers and so on, who can do their job. And you think, well, okay, they're vision impaired. How do they do their job? It's because they're getting assistance, technical assistance, and so on. And therefore, the opportunities are there to help anybody, really. And it's certainly something that should be investigated. I just don't feel BrewDog has done any investigation. They've just made their own minds up within their own parameters of what they know. And they said, well, look, we're off with this role. But they're basically saying, we're not willing to go any further than that and investigate how we can keep the current role with extra assistance.
You mentioned it there, Gary, but we are in 2018 now, and there is an expectation that companies are just more aware of sight loss and other disabilities. David, if you go to a concert, say, mm-hmm. you expect people to know what to expect with regards to dealing with your sight loss. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that BrewDog seemed completely unaware, like they'd been caught off guard with this, and reacted in a way that we would sort of expect maybe in the 1980s rather than the 2018s. Should we be further along? Gary, we'll start with you.
Absolutely. I always go back to an example in my lifetime when I went to the States to Florida and to Disney World there. And this was going back easily 12, 13 years, something like that. And I was struck by the assistance given to disabled people at that time. And I know this is 12, 13 years ago, but it doesn't seem that long time ago. But in terms of how far we've come, it is a long time, because when I thought back to the UK, I thought, well, we don't really have these facilities in the UK, but we are starting to get them. They're starting to creep in. But it does beg the question, well, why don't you just all do it? You know, it's there, the problems are there. What is taking you so long to sort of get to grips with it? And it, to me, BrewDog is an example of somebody who's just stuck in the old days and not willing to move with the times. If America can show that it can be done 10, 12, 15, 20 years ago, why can't we do it at the same pace? Why can't we be at the same level as them? And it's because we've just not put the effort into it. Quite simply, I think we're just not trying to find out what's needed. We're not trying to include disabled people in the workforce. We just feel there's enough people out there to employ and not bother disabled people. It's that type of attitude, I feel, that's still prevalent today. And we are, I think, a bit behind the times.
It's interesting, Gary, because you've just said there that BrewDog seem very behind the times. Now, they're generally regarded as one of the youngest and most vibrant up-and-coming companies out there. But for this, you're absolutely right. They do seem rather behind the times. And it does beg the question that if James had applied to work for BrewDog when he had his sight condition, as opposed to him already being employed and then starting to lose his sight, would they have discriminated against him?
I don't think it's a case of BrewDog being behind the times. I think it's a case of them just being naive. Because they're a young company and their owners, I think, are pretty young as well. So I think it's a case of naivety. Would they have discriminated against it? Possibly. It depends who conducted the interview, really. Because I had a college interview and the guy who interviewed me said, you know, if you're not able to look at a whiteboard to copy down shorthand, then we would have trouble accepting the application. So it's stuff like that, and they might have discriminated against him. So again, you'd hope in this 2018 inclusive world that that wouldn't happen, but you know.
But with the example that you're giving us, yes. There, I mean, I'm pretty shocked by that. Gary, how do you feel?
Well, I mean, this is what I mean. It's a very dated attitude. They're telling us this is the only way we know how to do it. And it's simply because they don't get the education to work out how they can assist people like people with sight loss. I go back to the same thing. I've said this for a long time. I think the best way forward for all these things is to bring, I don't want to digress too much, but to bring disability into education at schools. And you talk about BrewDog being a young company. Well, then they weren't at school that long ago. Now, had they had some sort of form of education about disability when growing up, they would have had that with them when they go into business. And they will then be able to have that awareness. I think a lot of this is down to just simply a lack of education.
It's interesting, actually, because that is definitely one end of the spectrum. And to look at the other end, while James was successful in his tribunal and won a payout, was there another route that he could have pursued with BrewDog? Or are we, as a society, approaching a dangerously litigious level, much like the United States, where his recourse was suing them, rather than trying to engage with them and make them understand what they had done with regards to the problems with him so that it wouldn't happen in the future?
Well, yes, I suppose it does sort of make it now walk away from the situation. They now no longer have to lie about it and pay off. So that's where once they're in with somebody else. So yes, I do think that whilst he may feel a little bit of satisfaction in getting some money, he must be very dissatisfied now. He's away from the situation and there's nothing more he can do about it.
Well, let's see how we go as we move on to our next story. And optometrists have warned children are developing permanent problems with their vision because they are not being given eye tests early enough. David, is this a matter of knowledge? Do you think people are aware of how young children need to be for their first NHS eye test?
I think so, but it should just be one of these things that comes naturally, you know, once your child reaches about 2, 3, or 4, go and get their eyes checked in the same way that you go and get everything else checked. It's parenting, you know, at a base level. And as somebody who is not a parent, the last thing that parents like is other people telling them how to raise their children. But go and get your kids' eyes checked. Why wouldn't you?
Well, as a recent father myself, one thing I would say is that no one hands you an instruction manual and tells you these are the times that you need to go and do things. And fair enough, there should be a bit of warning. But Gary, the problem in this instance does seem to be that parents presume that this is something that schools will take care of. But these tests are less comprehensive in schools than tests with an optometrist. You know, it's hard raising a child. Should parents be expected to do more, as David's suggesting?
Oh, I think so, yeah. But I think it should be something compulsory. Certainly should be ingrained into parents as to, you know, if you have children, then, like David said, at the age of 2, 3, or 4, eye tests should be compulsory of some sort. I think the problem that might come with that is then are opticians going to be completely inundated with demands for eye tests? So I don't know what the answer is, but I do think it is should be made compulsory.
I recently spoke with Rochelle Humes, who this year was the Children's Eye Health Ambassador. And the reason that she had accepted the role is because she had been completely unaware as well of just how young a child should be when they have their first eye test. Now, this is someone who's worked with companies like Specsavers for a long time, and she was still unaware. So is it a case of education? And if so, how do we go about raising awareness?
This comes back to what we were talking about before. And in this magical 2018 world that we live in, I don't really think there's an excuse for not knowing, given all the resources available. When you have a child, you'd register it to a dentist, a doctor. Should you also just register it to an optician? And then every so often you receive a letter or whatever saying, come in, it's time for an eye test. I really don't think it's a case of not knowing, because there's really no excuse for that now.
And David has stated, Gary, that he himself at the moment does not have any children. Do you have any children yourself?
I do, yes. Not babies anymore, though.
And were you aware when they were, say, 3, 4, that it was the time to take them to their first optician out with schools and nurseries?
Not necessarily, because of my condition. I was made aware of the fact that they may inherit my condition. So that was with the back of our mind. But because of the nature of the condition, they said there's no immediate hurry for it. So even from the early age of when they were 3 or 4, we were sort of hearing noises that they may need to be tested at some point. But we've perhaps waited until they're around about the age of 10. Now, if I didn't have the eyesight condition, would I have been made aware of this? No, I don't think I would have done. But we grow up and we know that we have to have certain jabs, injections when we're young, that sort of thing. In the same way, we should be educated to know that we have to have our eyes tested at the same sort of time, you know, before they join school, perhaps. Like I said, David said, I think the age of 2, 3, 4 is probably the ideal time. So, yes, it's a case of education. It might take a big effort to do that, but once the ball starts rolling, then people will just cotton on to it.
Now, David, Gary and I don't want to be stuck in this conversation ourselves. The Daily Connect is a place where you can get your voice across as well. What are your thoughts on this? Were you aware of how young your child should be when they get their first NHS eye test? or was it something you discovered later when your child was much older? And what's your thoughts on parents? Should they be more aware of this, or should it be the responsibility of opticians and schools? To let us know, do join the conversation. Tweet us at RNIB Radio, email radio@rnib.org.uk, or join the discussion on Facebook. Just search for RNIB Connect Radio. Okay, let's get back into it, shall we? So our final news story today, and scientists have used gene therapy to restore sight to mice by a mechanism that allows the eye to self-repair. Now, Gary, this story was published with the belief that it would raise hopes of a cure for blindness among visually impaired people. Do you feel any more hopeful?
Good question, because I was diagnosed just short of 1 year, short of 40 years ago, and I have been continually told that in the next 5 years, the next rest of 10 years, that they may find something. This is for my condition, retinitis pigmentosa. And then I was told, yes, we may well find something to help people with RP, but not necessarily your type of RP. I've heard this stem cell story about a year or so ago, I think it was. Are we any further down the line after a year? Well, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful because science is obviously improving things all the time. But how long it will take is another question.
It must be incredibly disheartening, though, to be told constantly, it's almost like a hope top-up. Gary, it's going to be fine. We're going to get it sorted. It'll be within 5 years. Okay, it might be within 10 years. 10 years down the line. Okay, give us another 5 years. Does it get draining? Does it start to have hopeful fatigue?
Yes, you lose hope in the end. I'm not saying it's necessarily anybody's fault. I think it's better perhaps to say that to somebody than to say, I'm sorry, but there's no hope. It may well be true that they are getting nearer to a solution, but to say it's 5 or 10 years is probably just a bit where it's not quite right. But to say that to a patient is probably not overly harmful. I think you've just got to adjust to it. I mean, after 40 years of hearing the same thing, you do get to adjust to it. Being told this, so nothing new to me. If someone said that to me today, I would just walk out feeling no more hopeful than I did going in. So that's because perhaps I'm older in years and I'm sort of used to hearing it. But younger people, I'm not sure how they would take it. But I do believe that we are getting closer.
Well, let's find out. David, you are significantly younger than Gary and I.
The resident young person.
Only just.
Only just. Yeah. These stories, they are published regularly. They're usually filled with a lot of technobabble. As a younger person, do you follow stories like these? And do you think you'll see a cure for most sight conditions in your lifetime?
Well, I see it as a bit of a water on Mars story. You know, there's one every couple of weeks, and they all, as you said, they're filled of techno babble, and it all seems to be the same thing. And as Gary said, it's going to be 5 years, 10 years until there's. It doesn't really make me feel hopeful at the moment because they're experimenting on mice. Once they start doing it to people, then maybe I'll feel a bit more hopeful. But I do think that in my lifetime, we may see considerable advances towards a cure because, there was a Canadian firm a couple of years ago who were trialling bionic lenses that would attach to your retinas, and I did a presentation on it for uni, and something like that sounds a lot more promising than injecting mice with drugs, which, you know, also kind of ruins the nursery rhyme of the three blind mice, but you know, that's another.
It's like as if the question you're asking is this a red herring?
Yes.
But you can't really answer that because it's not really a red herring, is it? Because they are trying to do something. Maybe the, like I said, the 5 or 10 years thing might be a bit of a red herring. But it, as I say, it's not meant to be harmful. So there's hope, but it's just a case of when and not if.
A very positive way to round up the news review today, and a lot to consider. I've mentioned it before, but we do want you to join the conversation and let us know what your thoughts are on these stories. Get in touch with us via Twitter at RNIB Radio. Search for RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook to join the conversation, or email us radio@rnib.org.uk. Now, Gary, before I let you go, tell us a bit about Sunset Melodies and when can we catch it?
Well, it's a nice, relaxing show of nostalgic music that gets you away from the humdrum of the world for an hour each week. It's on Wednesday at 7, repeated on Sundays at 6. The main kind of music I play are people like Frank Sinatra and Leo Lynn, Dean Martin, and that sort of music. There's a chance to get away from it.
And David, a little alternative is slightly different. Tell us a little bit about your show and when can we catch it?
Well, it's a nice, relaxing show of it. No, it's your weekly punch in the face, I suppose. All of the best alternative tracks around, as we said earlier, rock, pop, punk, crunk, anything that's not on the charts, we'll gladly play, and you can get that Fridays at 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 7.
Gary Moritz and David Hogg, thank you so much for joining me on the Daily Connect today.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Time now for the Daily Connect Society of the Week. And this week we are celebrating VICTA, who support children and young people who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families across the UK. VICTA organises activities designed to improve the emotional, social and living skills of the children and young people they support. Matthew talks of how important VICTA has been in his life.
Hello, I'm Matthew. I'm 23 years old. I came to know VICTA very well, properly, for the first time in 2012, when they stepped in to help fund and continue the UK's attendance of the International Camp for Computing and Communications, which is an international youth camp for blind and visually impaired people from all across Europe that takes place every summer. The lady who'd previously helped the UK group to attend could no longer get the funding together, and VICTA stepped in to provide the support and organisation that we needed to keep sending groups to it. On this camp, I've been to Vienna, Athens, and in 2012, Cluj in Romania. And just to me, an international camp like that is the summit of the incredible activities and experiences for children, young people, and families as well, with the younger kids as well, that VICTA helps people to enjoy and to experience. I find it difficult sometimes to make activities and experiences happen, and know of people that find it even harder. But having done so many wonderful things, whether at home or abroad, I know how much these sorts of experiences, getting to meet people, getting to row through parks in the middle of Romania's second city, or getting to climb Snowdonia and go to Zip World in North Wales with VICTA, which is another activity I've done with them. These sorts of things, they're not just fun. It's not just an opportunity to make friends, but I know that all the experiences I've had have helped make me happy and confident and interesting. And it's these sorts of things that VICTA, for me, helps to make happen for all of us who are young and live with sight loss, so that more of us can become rounded, interesting, and really confident adults and succeed in life. I made some incredible friends on the international camp, spending a whole week staying at a boarding school for the blind in the middle of a great city like Romania or Athens or Vienna. You're spending all that time together, going for breakfast in the mornings, doing great workshops in the daytime like photography or ballroom dancing, or getting to tear a computer apart and find out all the fascinating things inside. And then evening activities as well, like blind laser shooting, where you shoot the guns at each other, which I won as well with a good friend from the German contingent, not only have I had brilliant times like that on Victor activities, but on others like my trip with them to North Wales and Snowdonia, it was brilliant to find one or two of those friends from the international camps there again, and to make more as well. And even though I have so many fully sighted friends at university, it is just so much easier to relax and not feel pressure when I am with my partially sighted friends. There's just not the pressure to be as independent as I normally have to force myself to be. And that makes things a bit more relaxing and just means I can enjoy myself to a whole other level. The trouble I have now is, having made all of these great friends who are all across the UK, from the south coast to the likes of the northeast of England in Nottingham, Newcastle and other places, now I'm up in the west of Scotland. It's a heck of a long way to go and visit some people. So that's probably one of my future challenges that I've got to work on, is keeping in touch with all these great friends as we continue to do exciting things in life that great experiences like those Victor can provide have helped us to come on to.
If you want more information about Victor, do visit their website, Victa, that's VICTA.org.uk. And thanks once again to Matthew for talking to us about his membership of Victa.
The Daily Connect podcast.
RNIB's How I See campaign is a really innovative way of helping all of us better understand vision loss. Lots of you have been sharing your stories on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter, and of course right here on RNIB Connect Radio's Daily Connect. Here is Danny Forrest telling us about his condition, congenital cataracts and glaucoma. Danny is studying now at university, and we started by asking him how his eye health is now.
It's been getting better. I had a tube put into my eye in, I'm not sure what the year was, but I was 14 at the time. And that was to deal with some build-up in pressure and things like that within the eye. But it's getting better now. I'm still on meds, but I'm largely like recovered from it and all that, and things are going well for me at the minute with that sort of thing. I've had quite a lot of surgery over the years. Most of it I can't remember, like, because I was only little when I had a lot of it. But in recent years, I've had, I think, four since I was 14. In my view, like, the way I look at it, I'm used to it at this point, and there's no point in crying over something that's going to help me. I wouldn't say it's made it that difficult. I mean, obviously, you have to have, like, bigger print text, things like that. Other than that, it's not been too bad. I just that I just get on with it. Like, it's no point in whinging about it. I just get on with my day and try and do as best I can. I'd probably say my favourite lesson to do is film, just because it's a bit more less, it's less intense than the other lessons, and it's like you're more like free to explore your own interpretation of what you're seeing on screen, that sort of thing. Yeah, it's a creative subject. Like, the way I best described it was English literature, but with films instead of books. Because when we do like a screening in class, it obviously gets put up on the board, so it's easy to see, that sort of thing. I had like support when I was in school, and that, I mean, mates have always been supportive of us, that sort of thing, like giving us a hand if I couldn't like see some of that sort of thing. See, I'm just another person to them, that sort of thing. Like, when you're mates with someone, they don't judge you on it, that sort of thing. It's like the only people who judge you, in my opinion, aren't really worth speaking to, because they're not your mate. Whatever line of work or whatever course I go into, it'll be taken into consideration. So if, like, for larger print text and things like that, when I go to these places, obviously that'll be taken into consideration. But I don't, when I'm considering a choice of something I'm going to do, I don't really consider my eyes to be a major blocker to me doing something. Not like, how is this going to stop me? It's more, how can I work around it and do what I want to do? And I haven't got a problem with public speaking. I've always been quite a confident person when it comes to that sort of thing. Well, my favourite musicians, I would have to say, if I was picking a top three, would be Elvis, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. Yeah, I really like Andrea Bocelli as well, for one who's actually still breathing. But Yeah, I really like his music, and I'm very, very good at what he does. Did a couple of hours there, and I recorded four songs, and obviously one of those songs is the one you're gonna hear. Do like any like proper work with it or anything? Like, I'd like to think I could, but I haven't done that yet. I would just like to say to everyone who's listening, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and this is the song that I did, an adaptation of Elvis Presley's Blue Suede Shoes.
Ladies and gentlemen, Danny Forrest.
Well, it's one for the morning, two for the show, three to get ready now, go cat go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoes. Well, you can do anything but thank you for my blue suede shoes. Well, you can knock me down, step on my face, slander my name all over the place. Well, do anything that you want to do, but I'll hardly offer my shoes, and don't you step on my blue suede shoes.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
And that fantastic tune from Danny brings the Daily Connect Podcast to an end for another day. There will be a brand new Daily Connect podcast with you tomorrow, just after 5 p.m. And of course, you can get a brand new show every day, just after 5 p.m. via your usual podcast subscriber. If you want to listen to the show live, you can do so. Tune in to RNIB Connect Radio every weekday from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Tomorrow's show will be bringing you a very musical forum, as Sam Little and David Hogg will be in the studio discussing many things, including accessibility at gigs. We'll have a campaigns roundup of everything that RNIB have been taking part in recently, and we'll also be asking you to join us in our new research survey. We'll also hear from RNIB quizzers, blind quizzers, and we will have a little something for the weekend for you, as it's the final show of the week. Thanks so much for your company today, and you are listening to The Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect Podcast.